Experience the power of 5G with T-Mobile. With faster 5G speeds nationwide, you can upload your favorite videos super fast or game on the go. Plus, T-Mobile has more 5G bars in more places, so you can stay connected to what matters most from almost anywhere. Switch to T-Mobile today, the leader in 5G.
T-Mobile has America's largest 5G network, fastest based on median overall combined 5G speeds, according to analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data 5G speeds for Q4 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
You know the old saying, selling like hotcakes? What does that even mean? What is a hotcake anyway? They should change it to selling like Hondas, because right now, Hondas are selling faster than ever. Probably because they're so rugged, long-lasting, and fuel-efficient. And if you want one, you should get to your local Honda dealer right away. Check out the 8-passenger Pilot, or maybe the adventurous Passport. But you gotta do it fast, because Hondas are selling like, well, Hondas. New models are arriving right now. Don't wait. See your local Honda dealer today.
Welcome to Season 5. Support for the Boner Planet Podcast is presented by
Dead Downwind, Tinks, Shadowhunter Blinds, Burris Optics, Dead Ringer, The Grind, Bomar Archery, Element Outdoors, Reveal Cellular Camera, HHA and HHA USA, Black Eagle Arrows.
Additional support provided by Deer Camp Coffee and Yeti Coolers.
Hello, welcome to the Boner Planet Podcast. Myself, Dave Thomas, along with Tim the Mazarana, Jamie the Note Boom, and Matt Stamp, the Gun Guy. That's what we're going to call it.
There you go. That works.
I love it.
So, Matt, tell us about yourself and how you got into like YouTube and doing gun reviews and things like that. Because obviously, watching these things helps anybody, and that's one of the reasons we really want to have you on today. So, I guess, how'd you get started in all this?
Well, you know, first started out, you know, I did two tours in Iraq as a Marine Corps rifleman. I was also in the Arizona Army National Guard for a while. We were back in 03 when we took Baghdad, and later on I was attached to Joint Special Operations Command. We were just regular infantry guys. And then, you know, I'm a full-time dad. I've been working all these jobs, and I've watched YouTube videos just like everyone else. And I kind of got sick and tired of the whole kind of tactical movement, I guess you could say. There was this one argument that I heard about, the special operations argument, like which one's better. And they're like, well, SEALs are better because they carry 226s. And they're like, no, Green Berets are better because they carry Glocks. And I'm like, yeah, I've worked with both of them. And most of the ones that I saw carried 1911. They pretty much carried whatever the heck they want. So I don't know where they're getting their information from.
Yeah, good old internets.
I know. So I'm just like, you know, I gotta do something about this, because there's just so much. You know, before, you guys, if you've been following gun stuff for a while, I mean, what you had a while back, you had like Not Fancy. You had a couple channels out there. That's it. There wasn't really much. And then now everyone's jumping into the mix of it and throwing their own two opinions.
And well, they can until YouTube shuts you down.
Yeah, I know, which is a pain in the butt.
Just throwing that out there.
All my stuff's demonetized now, so I'm just like, whatever.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it's just, I got into it because I just really got tired of just the misinformation. A lot of people are treating like concealed carry. They're treating it like it's a firearms competition. There's nothing fast about, you know, defense, you know. So I just wanted to bring some facts and reality to it. And I'm not exactly a tactical ninja. I'm a full-time dad. Was a full-time dad. Now I'm a safety manager at a construction company. So I'm just kind of a real dude, and I like guns. So,
I love it.
Yeah. Now, you made the comment in your video, and I remember this because I remember the 1911 video, and it was very specific about you saying, this gun will not fire. If you know how to use it, it's not going to just fire on its own.
Yeah.
So can you kind of walk us through that gun in like the 1911? I mean, I know it's got a lot of history. But yeah. I guess you tell us about the gun, and then maybe what you're talking about when you talk about when it can and cannot fire.
The thing is with the 1911, a lot of people are kind of scared of it. I guess you could say it in the modern day kind of polymer world. They like the point and shoot guns. You know, you point has like a little trigger safety, like a Glock or something like that. And the 1911, it scares them because you cock it with a hammer all the way back. You know, it's designed to be carried cocked and locked. And there's multiple safeties on it. So you have the grip safety. So in order to make the gun go bang, you have to have a good solid grip on the grip safety. Yep. The hammer's back and it's a single action only. So if the hammer's forward, nothing will happen. Safety cock the hammer back. Then there's a second safety that goes up and holds it back. And the gun won't fire. It just won't, it won't go off unless you do something really stupid with it. So,
well, I mean, that sounds like there's more safeties on it than some other guns.
Well, that's the thing, there is. Yeah. Yep. And that's another one of those arguments is safeties are bad. I'm like, and then I brought up that argument a couple times. You know, people love their AR-15s and everyone uses a safety on it. So what's the difference?
Yeah, I don't know if they've met a guy like me. I can pretty much do stupid stuff with anything. So safeties aren't a bad thing.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not. No. Trust me, when I was overseas, I'd see people with Berettas hammering stuff in with them. So, you know, we're good.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
So I had a question for you in regards to this kind of newbie to the gun scene, because we got a lot of people. I mean, we're Bullhunter Planet, right? So I don't know if we've got a lot of people watching that are really into guns. What are the biggest mistakes that you see when somebody goes in to buy their first gun? Because I have a feeling this is just me, but like they want to buy the biggest, baddest gun out there, but I have a feeling that that's probably not the right way to go.
Now, well, first that's the actually opposite. I actually worked in the community. I worked in the industry for a little bit. I did gun sales and stuff like that. I was a lead firearms instructor at a place. And the thing that people want there is they look for the smallest gun that they can find. The smallest, lightest, usually like a 380 or something like that, because in their opinion, concealed carry means you need something itty bitty. So they pick it up and they're like, oh man, this thing's so light and it's good. And I'm like, okay. And then they're like, can I get it in like a 45? I'm like, if you want to, I'm like, I wouldn't recommend it. And they're like, well, why? What's wrong with it? I'm like, because it's a small gun and there's this thing called physics.
Yep.
So if you go with something small, you want to, you know, kind of a smaller caliber. So I go like, you know, 9mm, 380 or whatnot when it goes to a small gun. And a lot of people kind of shy away from the large guns just from the beginning. And for new gun shooters, I mean, I remember back when I was with pistols, which, you know, in the Marine Corps, we didn't have a whole lot of pistol training. I was a grenadier, so I shot a grenade launcher, so it's a little bit different.
Nice. But,
I mean, our version of pistol training was like, all right, this is a Beretta. Here's a helmet for the Fedayeen, you know, guys. Point it, pull the trigger. Yeah, the first trigger sucks, so pull it really fast and shoot it with the other one. You'll be fine. You know? That's how we were taught to do it. So I didn't have a whole lot of training when it came to the pistol, so I had to go to different places to get it. So I got it like my instructor's certification through the NRA, which is actually through Tactical Dynamics LLC. And then I went to 6-Hour Academy and I've gone to all these different places to get some training. And I've learned a little bit about it. And the biggest mistake that I see is for new shooters, particularly, they need to stick with a larger or mid-sized gun because you need to learn how to handle it. You need to learn how to shoot it. And you can't be scared of it. I mean, if you're new to the guns, there's a lot of people that are nervous about carrying it, even loaded or anything like that. Yeah. And if they pick up a 40 caliber, tiny little thing, the thing snaps so hard, it's ridiculous. Like, oh my God, I don't like this anymore. You know, yeah. So I usually start them off with like a bigger or a compact gun. I usually ask them a series of questions. What's the purpose of this gun? Do you want something for the house? Do you want something like carried? Do you want something in between? You know, I go like a whole spiel just to kind of help them out when it came to figuring that out. And then
you sell them four different guns because there's a purpose for everything, right?
Well, there's a purpose for everything. So when you've been, you know, carrying a gun for a long enough time, you know that there isn't one gun good for every situation, you know. But basically what happens when it comes to them is that I just try to teach them like learn the basics. So learn like on a compact gun or like a full size gun because it's easier to handle to start. And you'll get a feel for your marksmanship because it comes down to marksmanship when it comes down to any type of defensive situation. This is probably the same thing for bow hunting. I mean, yeah, you have the best.
We talk about ethical shots all the time.
Yep.
Like you want to take your shot, but it's got to be ethical.
Yep. Yeah. You don't want to hit them in the hips. You know, you want to hit them somewhere where it's going to drop them. Right.
Yeah. Right.
So and I teach the same thing. And, you know, and if you look at it, YouTube, there's a lot of, you know, the I call them the internet operators out there. They're all about the high speed, fast draw and everything like that. I'm like, yeah, but a lot of those guys, there's a lot of people that end up in the hospitals because they aren't really well trained in those firearms. So you need to learn the basics first. Start with something simple. And then as you get better at it, then you kind of work your way down, you know, work your way, you know, I guess, you know, how do you say, you work your way to different sizes and stuff like that. So you learn how to do it. So like me, I don't know anything about bows. You guys are probably
I think it carries over. Like even with bows and guns, practice is important, right? Like, so yep. Jamie, he wakes up every morning, takes a shower, goes in front of his mirror every morning naked and starts drawing his gun. Like, that's his practice.
Nice. That's new to me, but thanks for that.
Well, you got to build up that confidence, you know, right? You don't want to scare the deer away. So. Uh-huh.
Oh, you guys won't believe it, but like, there was, I learned about this. Matt, have you ever heard of Mr. Ballin on YouTube?
Oh yeah. Mr. Ballin. Yep.
So Mr. Ballin, he was, his channel, he did this video. It was about this guy named Jack Churchill, and yep. Jack Churchill was in World War II, and his main weapon was a traditional bow.
Yep.
Hey. He shot a Nazi with a traditional bow. Ooh. Seriously. The whole war, he ran around with a traditional bow. And uh-huh. in the event that he killed someone, an mm-hmm. enemy, he would pick up their gun and shoot it too.
Why not? there's another guy too, if I remember. He actually carried a long sword in World War II as well. I remember there's
Jamie also practices his long sword in the mirror in the morning.
I try. I did watch a lot of Conan when I was a kid.
But you know, I don't know much about modern day bows, but I love like medieval history. And I'll tell you what, those long bows, those things are pretty dangerous. They get some penetration on them, I'll tell you that from what I know.
They're like 1,000 grain arrow. I mean, they're like heavy. They were like heavy.
Like this is like 72-pound pole or something.
So is the 1911 the original 1911, is that got some of the same safety features as the new one as the old one or no?
There's various types of 1911, so I'm not a perfect historian. I'm actually Hickok 45 does a great video on it. You have the 1911, then you have the 1911 A1. So the 1911 A1, if you look at the original 1911s, they almost had no sights on it. These tiny itty bitty sights on it. And John Moses Browning is what I've heard people saying is basically what he explained it is like, well, you're not going to be shooting from a distance. You're going to be going right up to them and putting it in their ear. So, as an infantry guy, you know, is we're trained for long guns, you know, pistol, what's it good for, especially when there's cover, you know, throwing at someone. Yeah. There was really crappy sights on it. If you look at like an original 1911 from like World War I, World War II, you're like, wow, how did they shoot that thing? And also there's different like cuts. You see different little shapes and like the grip, it's kind of right above where the hands go on the grip. You'll still notice that. And I don't remember every single feature that comes to it, but I know like there's a flat guide for housing and then a rounded housing in the back. But the thing is it developed over the years and pretty much what we use today is based off the main platform. It's just improved it. I mean, you have better sights. You have the high visibility sights. You're my favorite. I like night sights. You have high visibility sights. There's various springs. You can get a big spring, get a small spring, whatever spring you want. You get fancy grips. There's extended safeties if you want them. You know, what makes, you know, I like to say is the 1911 is like the modern day Glock. How many people have you watched Glock videos just customize the heck out of their gun?
Yeah.
That's what the 1911 was, because back in the day when they were using like 1911s for competitions, they like went from revolver to semi-automatic, and the semi-automatic to use was pretty much the 1911. So everyone just started customizing the heck out of it, and they learned how to perfect it to each person. So that's what makes it such a unique platform, is it's based on old technology. It takes, you know, if you know anything about older stuff, it usually takes a little bit more maintenance and oil and grease and all that other stuff. But the thing is, it's so customizable, the ergonomics on it. You just point it and that thing is just exactly, if you train it, yeah, obviously it takes time to training. You pull the holster and it's just automatically set up where you need it to be when it comes to your grip. I'm like, well, that's good. And then the trigger pull is just phenomenal. I don't know if you guys ever shot a 1911, but man, the trigger pull just blows you away.
Yeah, have you shot that, Jamie?
Yeah, what? That's what I got, the TAC Ops 1911, the SIG. Yeah, I'd love
it. SIG makes pretty 1911s, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's nice looking, and I'm, you know, it makes me look like I'm a decent shooter. So
there you go.
Well,
the thing is, I've done classes when I had students come in. You know, I do like a basic pistol class in Connecticut. It's really tough to get a permit out here. It's just ridiculous, you know, laws when it comes to getting a permit out here. So you have to take a basic pistol course. And then after being
liberal, I didn't think about that.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, you can't even buy ammo out here unless you have a permit. In that case, I mean, right now you can't really buy ammo anyway because it's not there.
Right. No, these here, man, it's. I mean, everybody's following everybody trying to figure out when the shipments are coming in.
Well, there was actually a review, I think, Kalyan Noir, he actually did on a firearms guy or a big like ammo owner or whatever it was called. And he explained, he's like, so what exactly is going on? And basically what he said is like, it's like this. He's like, last year alone, there was 10 million new gun owners.
Wow.
So and they're actively participating in the ammo. So it's just, they just can't keep up with the demand. It's just so far behind right now. So, but you know, with the 1911s, like I said, it's a great system to shoot. Now, I've had students in my classes, I've usually had them qualify in like a Glock 19, because it's kind of a mid-sized gun, or like a Glock 17, once again, very simple, or like an M17, a 320, those are really, another really good ergonomically feeling gun and stuff like that too. I remember there's this old lady that went to one of my classes, she was probably in, you know, like mid-60s, you know, give or take. And it was the first time she had ever shot a gun, except for when she was a kid, when her dad, on her daddy's farm, is what she explained it. I just remember out there at the range, this was private property at the time, and we're just out there teaching people how to shoot. She could not shoot the Glock worth a damn. So, I mean, she just couldn't shoot it. And it's such an easy gun to shoot, very accurate gun to shoot. I'm like, wow, what's going on here? Like, everyone in the class were just acing the qualification part of it. So I'm like, you know what? Just try this. So I handed her my 1911, and she outshot just about every single student there.
Yeah.
So, because the triggers are so great on it, the ergonomic triggers everything. It really is. Every trigger pulls everything. The trigger's great. The ergonomics are great. It's a heavier gun for a bigger caliber, like the 45 ACP is what I prefer it in. So when you have the recoil, it's like this really, it's almost like a very predictable recoil is the best way to explain it. Like a 9, you barely flips up if you're holding it right. I've seen people do that with a 9. Don't ask me how that happens. But when you have a 1911, it's just like the solid, you know exactly when it's going to come right back down every single time. And it's not a, it's a soft shooter, and it's just fun. And with that trigger, they just make holes in the center mass. So
definitely. I love
that. In your opinion, are all brands made equal, or are there very big differences between brands?
I don't like looking at it as brand and stuff like that. Is I look at it like this. Everyone is a little bit different in their actual short, their hand size, their finger size, their grips and everything else. And I've seen people that have put their hands on like a simple Glock 19 and they can't even get their finger on the trigger. And that same class, I had a dude that had like Bigfoot hands, and the gun disappeared in his hand, you know? So the thing is with different brands is most of these modern day guns are actually based off the 1911 platform is where they came from. Then kind of Glock took over the Striker market and stuff like that. Now all these Striker fired pistols are out there. But if you pick up one, it could feel completely different from the other. So if you pick up like a HK VP9, man, those things just feel great in your hand. Compared to a Glock. I mean, you pick up a Glock, like, wow, this thing feels like a block. You pick up that, you're like, oh, this is kind of nice, you know, but that doesn't mean you can shoot it properly. Like my wife, she loves my Beretta 92X. That's one of my perfect personal favorite guns that I have. So she picked it up. She's like, oh, this thing feels so good in my hand. She shot it and the trigger pull scares her. So she went over to the P320 because the consistency and how it feels in her hand, and she shoots it a lot better than other guns just because her hand is, it just it works better with it, you know?
But I think that's exact same within the bow industry, right? Yeah. I mean, Dave and Jamie, I mean, you guys all attest to, I mean, there's a lot of different really good bow companies out there, and they make a lot of very similar bows, but bow A with Matthews versus bow B with Bowtech or Hoyt, although they're very similar specs, could feel extremely different from person A to person
B. That's exactly right, because that's what it turns into, right? It's your preference and what's comfortable to you. If you want the super fast bow, a lot of guys like that. I like the comfortable bow, right?
Yep.
That's just,
and Dave likes the grip.
Dave likes the grip. The thing about guns, it's a lot easier to change a grip. There's lots of grips.
There's lots of grips. Rough ones, so, soft ones, you name it.
Matt, talk us through, I'm going to share my screen real quick. Talk us through the Striker part of this, because some people don't really understand what that means with the Striker fire type system. Okay.
So what I could do is basically speaking, what a Striker fire pistol is. When most people, a lot of people think of a gun, believe it or not, they think of like a Beretta. You see an external hammer on the pistol, right?
Right.
A Striker fire pistol, it's actually an internal hammer is the best way to explain it to someone new. If you take a look at closer, you'll see that little thing that going in the top there, the little red part. Yeah, you point to it right there. It's an internal hammer. All right. So it's an internal hammer. So the difference between that compared to like a 1911, which is a single action pistol, or like a Beretta, which is a double action pistol, is this trigger pull is more consistent when it comes to a Striker fire pistol. It's more consistent than any other trigger pull that's out there. So I'm not a Smith, so I can't get into the full-fledged details of it. I can just tell you that there's a reason there's a lot of law enforcement agencies and military that switch over to Striker fired pistols, because you can mass produce them. And at the same time, they're very easy to use and they're very easy to shoot. And people can shoot them very accurate, very easily with minimal training just because of how simple or how, you know, how consistent the trigger pull is.
Go ahead.
No, you're good.
No, I was just going to ask. So because they're mass produced, does that make them easy to maintain too?
Yeah, it usually does. Like something like, you know, like there's so many classes out there like, oh, I could run 5,000 rounds through my gun and never have to clean it. Me, I'd have a heart attack. You know,
you gotta clean your gun.
you got to clean your guns. You got to oil your guns. So striker fires is because of, you know, Glock has built up the reputation of foam. It's become such a reliable handgun that pretty much every single striker fire handgun out there is designed to be pretty damn reliable. Now, there's one catch to it, and this is my own personal experience. And that's when it comes to a striker fire pistol. I have more, what do you call it? More misfires when it comes to a more light primer strikes with a striker fire pistol than I do with a hammer fire pistol compared to like a 1911 or like a double action, like a SIG or a Beretta. Yeah. It's, I don't know what it is, but for some reason, the striker it doesn't hit the primer as hard as say a hammer would. And just my personal opinion, I'm no armorer, so I can't confirm that, but that's just what I've noticed. So
Matt, when they explained it to me in that class I was in, he said he made the comment that this is pre-pressured this spring, and that right now, like if it was to go off by itself, it's not enough power to make it fire. But if you pull this back, it actually brings, I don't know, it does something more, and that pin goes back further and smacks. That's how it smacks it to give enough power to ignite it.
I'm no smith, so I can't tell you, but I just can tell you from what, you know, when I've shot thousands and thousands of rounds through them, and it's a very consistent trigger pull, and that's what makes it very nice. And it's not too hard, not too small.
Kinetic energy and potential energy.
Yep.
And I have no clue what I'm talking about.
That's all. I already lost this.
So something like
big
this,
words, Tim.
I try this, every once in a while.
Something like this, based off.
I remember
the
something from college.
Yeah, that's 100% off. That's based off of 1911. Very similar to 1911. What's that? That's a target model, that competition model. But the actual ergonomics, the shape of it looks like a 1911.
Priced right at stimulus numbers.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I wanted to ask you this question. I was trying to find it. There's like, I'll just click this one. It's not this one, but I think it's the shield or something, but it had like a thing back here, like a bump out.
Oh, the easy.
Yeah.
The easy. That was actually, I like to say that's the arthritis gun. That's the best way I can explain that. basically what it is they created the shield because there's a lot more to that specific gun than other stuff, but yeah, that's the easy. Basically, if you take a look at it, you see the grip on the back. So that thing, if I can't demonstrate it here because I don't do it, but I used to show it to the people in the gun shop. I put one finger on the front sight and just slide the slide back with barely any with barely even struggling. It was made. It's called easy because it was made specifically for people that has a hard time racking the slides and all that other stuff. And it has that massive safety on the back that's on there, and it's kind of like a 1911 base safety on it. But the crazy thing. Yeah, it's a safety. But the crazy thing about M&P is if you take a look at them side by side with a 1911, the ergonomics are almost identical.
Yeah, is this considered a nice gun or this one?
It is. I haven't had any heard any complaints about it. You know, I haven't heard any complaints whatsoever. Some people love it, especially for a new shooter. One of the biggest things that new shooters struggle with is learning how to manipulate that slide. They forget that you got to push with one hand and pull with the other and let the, you know, physics do the rest. So they kind of ride the slide home and they cause a malfunction or something like this. This is so easy to use that for a new shooter, it's a great starter tool. And for someone that wants, you know, even like I said, a woman that has arthritis or a man that has arthritis, whatever it is, something like that still gives them the tool that they could use to carry and they could still use it in a situation if they need to. So
Matt, what would you recommend?
Hi, it's John Taffer from Bar Rescue. Did you know the second building in America was a tavern? When I built my new restaurant franchise concept, Taffer's Tavern, I thought back to the roots of what makes a tavern, timeless character, all while delivering an unbelievably delicious food and beverage experience. That paired with my 40 plus years in the industry provides a clear roadmap to success. Do you have what it takes to be a Taffer's Tavern franchisee? If so, I'd love to hear from you. Visit franchise.tafferstavern.com.
Do you like low taxes more than tall buildings? Does quality of life sound like an oxymoron? Do you wish work from home was more about home? Then Ohio is for you. Ohio has a business-friendly climate with 0% taxes on corporate income, R&D investments, and goods sold out of state. With a highly skilled and growing workforce, a low cost of living, and a high quality of life, Ohio is better for businesses and employees. Because Ohio isn't built for followers, they're building for leaders. Check out ohioisforleaders.com to learn more.
Be a top five for a subcategory, a subsize for a carry. I guess what would be your top five, you think, for somebody who's newer?
Usually what I do for newer students, I tell them try to stick with a striker fire pistol just because it's teaching you the basics of it. But basically what I would do is I'd say I like to base it off of, you know, what's it going to be? Is it something you're going to be carrying 24/7, or is it something that you're going to have at home and carry all the time? You know what I mean? So you could go with, say, like a Glock 17. All right, that's a good one, a Glock 17, or like M&P. All right, just like a standard M&P. That's a full size pistol. All right. For a concealed carry, the great start would be a compact pistol for a new shooter, because it's just big enough. So like get like a Glock 19 or M&P compact. And you'll see what I mean. It's just a little bit smaller.
I have an M&P Compact 40.
They're good guns. They make really good guns. And it's that mid-size where, you know, what I tell people, all my students, is use the biggest gun that you can handle and carry and that you can conceal. So when it's the compact side, when it comes to like concealed carry, if you're looking at that, the thing that stands out the most with concealed carry is the pistol grip, the length of the pistol grip. That's what prints the most. So a compact gun has a slightly smaller pistol grip, which allows a little bit better concealability, but it's not so small that it doesn't, you know, you don't have the English pinky when you're trying to shoot, if you catch my drift.
Yeah. It was funny that we were tossing around some pictures of our guns earlier today in a text message, and I was joking around with the guys, and I sent him a picture of my kid's BB gun, little tiny BB gun, and I noticed when I was holding the BB gun, my pinky was out.
That's funny, man. For new shooters, you want as much meat on that gun as you can, because you got to learn how to shoot it. Yeah. I mean, because it's like a hammer. If you guys have used a hammer for any period of time, there's some dudes that don't know how they do it. They can just hit a hammer once and it goes in. I'm like, whoa.
We're not talking to men here, by the way. We're not talking to real men here. We have office jobs and we sit behind the desk.
Hey, I'm the same person. I have an office job and I shoot guns, so it's the same thing. But you develop that grip, and grip is everything when it comes to shooting, whether it's recoil management, just holding the gun in general. So you want as much, especially for new shooters, you want as much meat on the gun as possible. So I would go with a compact size. And like I said, that would be like for my top three models. If you look at that, I'd say Glock 19, M&P compact, or like an HK VP9 SK is a good one. Oh, that's actually a unique one. If you can pull up a picture of that, that one's a decent one, because it's very small, but it has a magazine with an extended pinky on it, so you can get a full grip on it. So
threw him off.
Yep. The problem was he was trying to write all that down, because tomorrow he's going to go out and buy every single one of them.
Exactly. I got to get my stuff right. Order. This one here,
HK VP9 SK is what you're going to want to look for.
Yeah, that's a pellet gun. You don't want that.
Oh. Yeah, no. Yeah, the Heckler & Koch VP9 SK is what it's called.
SK.
I believe it's the SK, yeah.
Let me do this first. Let me just copy this thing. VP9. There it is. SK.
Yep.
They don't have it, huh? Buds, come on now.
Oh, okay. Buds usually has everything. Just Google it.
I know. I just thought it was weird. Buds didn't have it. They usually have everything. Wow, that's nice.
No, that's just a standard VP9. The smaller version, the SK, it's basically just got like almost like a subcompact slide, but the pistol grip is small too, but the magazine has a strange angle on it where you can get all your pinkies onto it.
Oh, that's sick.
And because of that grip and that angle of it, even with me, I got, you know, I'm a 6'1" dude, and I can get my full hand on that just because when you have that specific base plate on it. But
does it come with that base plate?
Yeah, I know the ones that we had in the shop when I was working there usually would have one of those base plates.
Yeah,
but I know it's obviously something you can get off, you know, off the market and just pop it on the bottom of it. But it's a very small pistol. It's like a subcompact, but it's got that, you know, extension on the grip. So
what kind of price points this gun, you think?
Your HK, you're talking, it's going to be anywhere between 5 to 7, give or take. That's just what HK is. Yeah, so
it's not bad.
Yeah, is this comparable to the Hellcat?
I don't have that much experience with the Hellcat, believe it or not. So I wouldn't be able to tell you, honestly.
Is that Smith & Wesson? I can't remember.
Hellcat's Springfield Armory. So.
Oh, Springfield. Yeah.
Springfield yep. makes nice stuff.
Yeah, they do. They make really nice 1911s. I love theirs.
Yeah, there's so many nice 1911s. Yeah, this is the Hellcat, I think, this one. Yeah, it looks somewhat similar.
But looking at it now, it kind of looks more like a it's what you say, it's competition with the Sig Sauer P365. That's the very subcompact, pinky hanging in the air kind of size. Where the SK, it's got the compact, but it has that extension, which helps a little bit. So.
Yeah, I like that a lot. That's cool.
And it's really small, and like you can't, it's hard to tell in that picture, but it's actually got a decent, you know, a small slide. So it's very concealable and very comfortable when you shoot it. So it's still going to be a little bit snappier than your average pistol just because of the size of it, but it's very concealable, which is kind of nice. And HK in general, they have one of the best triggers. If you have ever shot an HK VP9, man, the trigger is just, it's just great trigger. So.
And would you recommend the 9 being a good caliber for a carry?
I would, especially for new shooters. I mean, I've seen plenty of videos and stuff like that, and firsthand experience of what, you know, real world ballistics is like. With modern day ammunition and stuff like that, 9mm it gets the job done. It might take a little bit longer, but it'll get the job done. But it's, you know, when you're in a defensive situation in real life, if you ever look at any security footage or something like that, it's usually over pretty quickly. So something like a 9mm is, it can do one of two things. When you're aiming center mass, I'll just ask you guys, because I ask this all my students. So when you're aiming center mass, what are we aiming for? Just ask any of you guys.
Torso.
Vitals, period.
Vitals, stopping the person, right? Just somehow to stop them. Stop the threat. I got a word.
That's
right.
What everyone thinks is, but we're actually aiming for the spine.
Uh-huh.
Ah, yeah, okay.
You're actually aiming for the spine because you want them to stop being a threat, right? That's the goal to defense. It's not about just shooting them until they're done and keep shooting them. It's shooting them until they're no longer a threat. So the quicker they're down on the ground and out of the fight, the better. So we're actually aiming for the spine, we aim for the center. If it just misses the spine, it'll get those vital organs into it. So if you hit someone in a good spot, it'll work very well, right? It'll work very well. All of the calibers work very well. But when people have the adrenaline and stuff like that, you never know if they get hit with whatever size caliber. Heck, they get hit by a 50 caliber and still run away. You know what I mean? Not a 50 caliber BMG. That's not happening. I've seen that. No, that's not happening. Ugh. But like the Desert Eagle, I think that's, oh my God, don't even get me started on that damn gun. Well, like,
too many movies.
I know exactly, man. If I remember, there was a Navy SEAL, I believe he got shot 26 times with the AK-47. So that's 7.62x3.9, and then he still survived.
Wow.
So willpower is a lot. So, you know, and then you got to think of the other thing. There was a video that I watched. It was, I watched a lot of badge cams. There's a great YouTube channel I watch. It's called Police Activity. They show a lot of badge cams and stuff like that. I remember they showed a video. The police do have a tendency to run into drug zombies. It's the best way to explain it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what size caliber you have. I mean, they're just so doped up that it's all about where you hit them at the end.
Their body quit, they're not gonna quit.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing, is what I talk about in my channel. I kind of bring this up there because, like, you know, I talked about when I started my channel, was that because I got tired of the tactical kind of nonsense that I see out there.
For sure.
Yeah.
And it's like the one thing that people, you know, there's another video that I watched about it. At the end of the video, between two police officers, they shot 70, right, if I remember, 72 or 73 rounds of one suspect. Right. And they're shooting through the car and everything else. And they originally actually went to the actual shooting because he was threatening to kill himself. And their job was to try to stop him from killing himself. And they chased him down the street, shooting him with pistols, shooting him with rifles when he was just waving the gun in the air. And when the guy was obviously stopped, because the difference between stop and dead, a lot of people can't determine the difference between stop and, you know, totally stopped. He continued going. His partner literally had to tell him to stop. Right. The tactical kind of community is created is when they think stopping power, they'll tell you that there's no such thing as stopping power. It's about shooting until them, in their mind, it's about shooting them until they are, you know, ice cold and on the floor. That's not what self-defense is about in the civilian world. It is hitting them until they are no longer a threat to you, your family, or anyone else. So if you hit them and they're down and they're not pointing that gun at anyone else, you're
it's
done.
Over. Yeah.
You're done.
See, and that's what the good, I had my training with a Detroit police officer.
Yep.
And he was absolutely blunt about everything, right?
Yep.
You don't want to ever have to pull this gun because your life changes and you think about that every single day.
Everything changes. Yep.
And you know, he was so blunt that some people were walking out, but you know how much I learned from that and what I shouldn't be doing. And
yep.
You know, and I'm hearing all these guys taking classes with some dude that says you have to have 17 magazines on you at all times. Yeah. Why would you take a class from a clown like that? It's just going to get you into trouble.
Yep,
right?
You
know, the whole like carjacking thing, guy gets in your car.
Yep.
It's over. You can't shoot him or you're going to jail. So if you don't know things like that, it's all these idiots that give us a bad name from, you know what I mean? And just turn
it on. And to your point though, I think it's bad information because I've been to a class or two where they tell you shoot to kill. And to your point, that's not it.
That's you're not doing that.
You don't want that on you.
Yep.
You're not in war. Yep.
Nope.
You shoot to stop. That's what it is. It's until they're no longer a threat. And I say that so many times in my videos. So for me, is my personal preference when it comes to a carry around would be a 45. I like 45 ACP. One, I like my 1911s. You guys, that's been my most popular videos when it comes to 1911s, because as big of a gun it is and as heavy it is, it's very thin. Very, very thin. And literally with a t-shirt on in the summer, I can conceal that thing. And that's a full-size 5-inch pistol just because of the size of it. And it has a single stack magazine. So you have 8 rounds of 45s, what I usually have into it. Now I'm not going to get into it on this, but I've been in combat. I've seen what ballistics will do. And I can tell you for fact, the bigger and heavier the round is, the quicker someone's going to fall. And in a civilian situation, you're not trying to get them till they're, fall and, never come back up again.
Yeah.
You just want them out of the fight. That's it.
Yeah.
You also got to keep in mind when it comes to concealed carries is different states have different laws. When it comes down to like here in the state of Connecticut, for example, basically the way how it works is you can only defend yourself. There's no other there's nothing else you can do and you cannot escape. If you have an escape option, you cannot legally by law defend yourself. So there's different little twists that people put into when it comes to those laws. Now, obviously we have 10 round magazine laws out here too, which freaking sucks. Don't even get me into that. But once again, it's like I see a lot of these people going to the grocery store with like 3 guns on them and like 3 magazines for each guns. I'm like, how many times have you seen the cargo pockets that look like they're about to freaking explode or just crap? It's like
bullets falling out.
It's like every single like security footage that I've ever seen is it's over fast. So one of two things happens: you hit them and they run away, or you hit them and they fall down. That's what happens. Now when they're running away, yes, you cannot engage them. However, if they are running away, you got to check your state laws with this too, and they are waving the gun in random areas or possibly shooting off guns, and they're still a threat to you and everyone else. So that's a entirely different situation.
Right.
But for the most part, if you hit someone like a gas station, you're going to the gas station, get your ho-hos, because I love ho-hos, those things are good, right? So I go to the gas station, get a ho-ho and a Slurpee or whatever, and some dude comes in there, is like, one, I'm not going to pull from my crotch and, unload 15 rounds without a clear backdrop and maybe hold the guy fall. And I'm not going to follow him down to the ground because that's a cool thing to do. Then kind of look around like I just shit myself and then put it back in the holster, I'm going to shoot until he's no longer a threat. And I'm going to take accurate shots, because what I tell all my students when I do the classes, like I said, my classes, the basic classes, you guys know the Naked Gun series, those movies. He's standing there riding the bullet and, and stuff like that. I'm like, well, picture that, except change his face out for a lawyer that costs $5,000 an hour. Every single bullet that you shoot, you have that damn lawyer riding on it. So you take your shots, you take accurate shots, and marksmanship is everything. You take accurate shots, and then when they're no longer a threat, guess what? You stop, because you have you can't do it anymore. You just can't, unless they're threatening you or anyone else. So sorry to get heated with that, guys, because I hear a lot of crap.
It's really scary, because the some of the guys that they let teach classes are teaching stuff that's not gonna, it's gonna lead to some trouble for a lot of people. And then you see it on the news, some guy steals a drill from Home Depot and some other guy lights up his car.
Yeah, you can't do that.
What the hell are you doing?
We live in Detroit, so that's more common than what you might think of in Connecticut.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it depends on where you are out here. So now, I also keep in mind that Connecticut, as you're saying, going to Boston, Connecticut isn't really a state. It's just a highway between Boston and New York. So
that's,
just throwing that out there.
That's what we think too, yes.
Don't stop for gas here either. Just, you don't want to stop for gas here.
Correct me. So we planned out our trip out to Boston, and my wife's like, there's actually no direct route through like New Hampshire and Connecticut out to Boston. Like there's no expressways.
One thing is like, you know, I work in the tower industry, so we build towers and stuff like that. I'm a safety manager, so I have to go out to job sites in Massachusetts or something like that. So I'll explain Massachusetts like this. Have you ever been there before at all?
No,
I have.
Okay, so Massachusetts is like, you can only explain it as like you have cattle trails. So if you want to get here, in order to get here, you have to go like this.
Yeah.
And then eventually the circles will lead you there. So yeah. That's just how Massachusetts is.
Yeah.
You can't escape it.
That's what the wife was telling me is like, mm-hmm. if we go through Massachusetts, and she was saying that if we go through Massachusetts other than this other route, it actually takes like an hour and a half longer.
Yep. Because you got to go around in circles to get everything.
Which on a map, it's quicker, right? Point A to yep. point B, it's quicker.
Yeah, but
not,
that's a bird's eye view.
You travel by the road, so.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt. It's a pain in the butt.
That's too funny, man.
Yeah, that's Massachusetts for you. So.
Well, I can't wait to get out. I'll have to connect with you before I go out there because we need some tips on where to go and what to see and kind of the to-dos, so. It'll be my first time up really in 30 years, you know, to New York and above. So
New York isn't that great. The pizza's good.
We plan on stopping in Pennsylvania to camp, traveling through New York, and then we'll go on from there. So
it's a three-way highway.
We'd hit New York for a little bit. We actually wouldn't hit Pennsylvania or anything except for with COVID going on, the Canadian. So we're in Detroit, right? And Canada is a hop, skip, and a jump away.
Yeah.
And for us to get from us to New York is usually only about 4.5 hours because we can cut through Canada. But with the borders being closed, we can't cut through Canada. So we got to go the long way around out there.
Yep.
It is what it is.
Well, if you're going through upstate New York, if you're big in a sand fishing, that's a good place out there.
Trust me. I don't want to go anywhere near the city. So we're going to stay.
It'd be fun pulling a camper through downtown New York.
Yeah, Ninja Turtles might show up and steal your pizza.
No.
If you want to see stuff in Boston, just think historical landmarks, Old North Church, stuff like that. It's all out there. So
yeah, and that's kind of what I'm interested in Boston, not necessarily like the city and the scene or all that kind of stuff. It's more the historic area.
Take the kids to Sam Adams.
Go out to a bar and have some good seafood, and we'll be good.
Yep, they got good seafood out there, that's for sure. So if you are in the Connecticut area, in between the Connecticut and Massachusetts area, look for a place.
2 hour stretch?
Depends on the way you go in traffic. Because like I said, Connecticut's a highway, so everyone's backed up trying to get into Massachusetts. Right. If you're looking for a good fish place, look for Lenny and Joe's.
Hold on.
Yep, Lenny and Joe's.
Write that one down.
Yep.
Lenny and Joe's.
Oh yeah, that's like the best Connecticut fish place, and they got fancy T-shirts you can get too if you go to it. They're usually out in the piers and stuff. So
I love it.
Yeah,
Tim's a good shirt wearing.
I'll tell you what. One of the this is completely off topic, but one of the fun things that we like to do, like as a family when we're camping, is I don't know if you've watched Dine-In Drivers and Dives.
We went to a place for that.
Yeah.
So everywhere we go, and there's a lot that have been closed down since that show has started, but everywhere we go, we try to look up the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives restaurants in that area.
Yep.
And that's kind of how we plan out like our food scene when we go.
Yep. So, my wife and I did that once. We lived in Arizona. I grew up in Connecticut. You know, I got stationed in California, met my wife out there. And then, you know, we bought a house in Arizona, then eventually came out here with work. But we did that for a while. And there was this place we went to in Arizona. I was like, oh, this is on Diners, Drives, and Dives. I go to it. I got the chicken sandwich. I'm like, oh, this is the one. I'm like, wow, this is the driest damn sandwich I've ever had.
I love it. I've had a couple experiences like that, and there's been plenty of experiences where like it's either changed ownership since the show's aired it or they're closed, so you kind of got to be careful with it. But It's kind of fun because the kids like get to see like the food that's on there, and when you go there and it actually is good, to your point, when it actually is good, it's kind of a cool experience for them. Kind of memorable.
We stopped at the American Pickers headquarters on the way out.
Really?
That was cool.
That's cool.
That building is so tiny though, I had to like duff my head. I'm like 6'1", like holy crap, but like this
that's
is cool.
Awesome. Yeah, because they do a lot of their stuff like online or on auctions. They don't really have a lot to sell like in store.
Oh, if you ever see their shop, you're like, wow,
this is small.
This is like a garage. So that's the Tennessee one.
That's kind of like Tennessee. Our studio. You know, every time you want to come over, like our studio looks awesome in video. You come over, like, oh yeah, it's a basement.
Well, that's how my videos are. See, my wife does like online sales, so she has an upstairs office, she has a back office. I get the basement. We're good, you know.
Yeah.
I get my workshop, the basement, you know, and then I have her wedding dress on the other side, and you know, stuff like that.
Yep. That's it. You got to play it off though. Like we call ours Bow Hunt at Planner Studio One. You know, it's about 600 square feet of this of a basement of one of our business partners that, you know, built out his basement to look like a log cabin. And it looks really cool. Don't get me wrong. Like our video looks amazing and all that kind of stuff. But you pull up and you're like, oh, yeah, it's a house. And you walk in the basement. And that's it. So
let me correct you. It's 1500 square feet. Oh, and actually, it's probably bigger than that.
Well, yeah, but we only use 600.
2000 square feet.
Use 600 square feet though. Like our office is
starting the garage. It's all
10 by 15.
We moved up.
No, that is true. Dave and I, back in the day, Dave and I, when we originally start this, it was in his garage, and it was not like his whole garage. It was the corner of his garage, right? So imagine two walls coming together. There was 6 feet on either side of that corner where we built out where it made it.
That was like 100 square feet.
Yeah, it made it look like it was kind of like a wood cabin, and the camera was just pointed right there. You look at the rest of the garage. We had the heater going in the background because we're in Michigan. So between shots, we'd have to turn the heater on and shut it off because it was too loud to take the videos. And time has changed. But
same thing with mine is that. I have a couple issues when I do videos. I do my own editing and stuff like that. I have to cut out a lot because anytime someone flushes the damn toilet.
Yeah. We have to wait for people to stop walking. Yeah, like, stop walking around.
Then my boiler comes on because it's like 9 degrees out. And you're like, oh my God. And then my kids are going up and down the stairs. I'm like, video people.
Yeah, our company is almost broken up a couple times because on nights when we could get the better bet together pre-COVID, you'd have a group of guys that were doing the podcast. You'd have a group of guys that were trying to get videos done, and they're fighting each other. We're like trying to do a video, but the podcast guys are talking, and then the podcast guys are doing their thing, but they hear the guys outside talking. And, you know, we kind of got into it a couple times, but, you know, we survived. Yep.
It happens. We learned. So.
All right, Matt, thanks for joining us, man.
No problem, guys.
And that was nice to learn a lot as well. So we'll post the link to your YouTube page below. And thanks for hanging out with us, man. Honestly, it's been a lot of fun. So thank you.
No problem, guys. So we said you invited me to Bow Hunter Planet. I'm like, I don't know crap about bows. What are we going to talk about?
Experience the power of 5G with T-Mobile. With faster 5G speeds nationwide, you can upload your favorite videos super fast or game on the go. Plus, T-Mobile has more 5G bars in more places, so you can stay connected to what matters most from almost anywhere. Switch to T-Mobile today, the leader in 5G.
T-Mobile has America's largest 5G network, fastest based on median overall combined 5G speeds, according to analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data 5G speeds for Q4 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
You know the old saying, selling like hotcakes? What does that even mean? What is a hotcake anyway? They should change it to selling like Hondas, because right now, Hondas are selling faster than ever.
probably because they're so rugged, long-lasting, and fuel-efficient. And if you want one, you should get to your local Honda dealer right away. Check out the 8-passenger Pilot, or maybe the adventurous Passport. But you gotta do it fast, because Hondas are selling like, well, Hondas. New models are arriving right now. Don't wait. See your local Honda dealer today.